crickets sang noisily as the guard walked slowly around the back of the prison. His eyes scanned the woods, looking for any movement. Satisfied, he walked on, turning the corner and out of sight. Immediately, a shadowy figure darted from behind a tree, racing to the prison wall. It went straight to a small window and whispered inside, "Rebbe! Rebbe! Please wake up! It's Naftali! Please, Rebbe! I don't have much time!" Rebbe Yochanan rose quickly from the straw mat that he had for a bed. "Naftali? Baruch Hashem! It's wonderful to see you! But why do you endanger yourself by coming here?" Naftali told Rebbe Yochanan about the cave and his idea to teach the children there. "But the children are frightened, Rebbe. I thought if you would write to them, you might convince them to continue learning." "Of course, Naftali. I will do so right now. Please, let me have the quill and the parchment." Naftali handed them through the bars of the window. By the light of the moon, Rebbe Yochanan wrote a poem to the children. These are the words that he wrote. "Dear children, I love you so. Want only to help you grow. Now that you face shame and disgrace, there's something you need to know. The Torah, so holy and pure, without it we could not endure. Whatever the cost, it must not be lost, so our future will still be secure. Like the flower which turns its face toward the sun, like the runner drinks water after his run, like the child who yearns to be held late at night, we yearn for the Torah, our strength and our light, like the beat of the heart and the thought of the brain, like the air in our lungs and the blood in our veins. Couldn't live without Torah for even one day. Don't ever allow them to take it away." "We've wandered for so very long through lands where we did not belong. We've witnessed the fright of our enemies' might and their hatred so terribly strong. But children, we must realize they don't need their guns or their knives. By daring to burn the books that we learn, they're attacking the source of our lives. Like the flower which turns its face toward the sun, like the runner drinks water after his run, like the child who yearns to be held late at night, we yearn for the Torah, our strength and our light, like the beat of the heart and the thought of the brain, like the air in our lungs and the blood in our veins. Couldn't live without Torah for even one day. Don't ever allow them to take it away. Like the beat of the heart and the thought of the brain, like the air in our lungs and the blood in our veins. Couldn't live without Torah for even one day. Don't ever allow them to take it away. Don't ever allow them to take it away. Don't ever allow them to to take it away. Don't ever allow them to take it away. Naphtali took Reb Yochanan's letter back to the children and their parents. Everyone agreed to follow their Rebbe's instruction. Right away, Naphtali began to teach classes in the cave. The children loved their new surroundings. In the beauty of the forest, far away from Wolfgang's soldiers, the children forgot their fears and learned the Torah joyfully. Meanwhile, Wolfgang was not at all suspicious, because each day, Naphtali left a different group of children back in the city for Wolfgang to see. Naphtali dared to breathe a bit more easily. Perhaps the situation could remain this way for a while. Yet, there were two giant problems. Firstly, Rabbi Yochanan was getting weaker. The cold, cramped cell had begun to affect his health. Secondly, the count's anniversary was in 7 days, at which time all of the Sfarim in the storehouse would be burned. Naphtali said Tehillim with all his heart, pleading with Hashem to help them. As of yet, however, he saw no way out of the problems. The next day, Naphtali's son Shimon woke up with a burning fever, and Naphtali's wife asked him to stay home. Late in the morning, Naphtali stepped out of his house for some fresh air. In the distance, he heard the sound of many horses. He looked down the road and saw the large white stallions of the royal guard. They were galloping in front of a golden carriage. That was the carriage of the crown prince, and it seemed to be heading for Wolfgang's estate. Naphtali ran to his horse and followed after it. Just before the estate, Naphtali pulled his horse off the road and watched from behind the trees. The golden carriage had stopped about 100 feet from Wolfgang's front gate. 2 minutes later, the gate opened, and Wolfgang ran out, visibly shaken. He hadn't been expecting this royal visit. He stood in front of the carriage, head down. One of the soldiers spread a red carpet on the road in front of the carriage door, and then it opened. Out stepped the crown prince. Naphtali blinked. He had never seen the prince before. He looked magnificent in his golden crown and flowing purple robe. What was this? He seemed to be shouting at Wolfgang. The count kept his eyes on the ground, his face growing redder and redder as the prince's words shot like arrows into him. Abruptly, the prince turned on his heel and re-entered the carriage. The soldier closed the door, rolled up the red carpet, and the carriage was off again. Wolfgang ran back through the gate, and the scene returned to normal. Naphtali returned home and told his wife about the meeting between Wolfgang and the crown prince. "If the prince is angry with Wolfgang," she said, "we have to find out why. It may be good for us in some way." "Well, how do I find out?" Naphtali asked. Mrs. Adler went to her jewelry box and took out a string of pearls. It was her wedding gift from her parents. "Take these and bribe the soldier who guards Wolfgang's estate. Maybe he'll tell you." "You know it's against the law to bribe a soldier," Naphtali said. "If the soldier doesn't go along with it, I might find myself in prison." He looked into his wife's eyes. He could see her strong faith in Hashem, and he felt strengthened. Without another word, he took the necklace and went back to Wolfgang's estate. Naphtali walked up to the guard. He was standing stiffly at attention. "Good morning," he said. The guard didn't answer, eyeing him suspiciously. Naphtali took a deep breath. "Please, Hashem," he thought, "may this work out." Then he said to the guard, "You know, I saw the crown prince talking to Wolfgang not long ago. He seemed to be very angry. I'd really like to know what's going on between them. Of course, I have a token of my appreciation for your kindness." Then he took the necklace out of his pocket. The guard stared at Naphtali with cold eyes. He looked down at the necklace. Then he looked to the left and the right. Quickly, he took the necklace and put it under his cape. Looking straight ahead, he told Naphtali that the prince was furious with Wolfgang because he had not captured Gregor the Bandit. Having said what he knew, The guard became silent, keeping his gaze straight ahead. "Thank you," Naftali told him. Then he left. Naftali went straight home. He found Shimon sitting up in bed, his wife on a chair at the bedside. Naftali brought another chair over to join them, and he told his wife and son what the guard had said. "Wolfgang does have a problem," Naftali concluded. "It's almost impossible to find Gregor. There are too many places in the mountains for him to hide." "Father, why not lay a trap for him?" Shimon suggested. "We could let the word out that a wealthy nobleman would be traveling down the highway. Gregor would come down to rob him, and the Count's soldiers would jump out and arrest him." "Gregor has too many men," Naftali answered. "To arrest them all, the Count would have to send a whole detachment of soldiers. Gregor would see them from the mountaintop and just stay away." "They could hide, Father," Shimon responded. "My dear son, where would you hide a detachment of soldiers in the middle of the forest? Where would you hide? Everyone was deep in thought. Suddenly, Shimon clapped his hands and shouted, "Abba, the secret cave! The soldiers can hide in the secret cave! There's enough room there for 50 men! Mrs. Adler cried out, "Naftali, if you tell the prince about the cave, he may be able to catch Gregor. Perhaps he'll be grateful enough to let Rabbi Yochanan out of the dungeon and give us back the Sfarim." Naftali thought it over for a few minutes. He looked at the hopeful faces of his wife and son. He hated to disappoint them. "It's not so simple," he finally said. "I doubt the prince would help us. He hasn't been kind to the Jews in the past. And I doubt he would want to tangle with Wolfgang for our sake. Furthermore, once I tell the prince about the cave, the children won't be able to learn there anymore. How can I give away the Torah of the children and be left with nothing?" Naftali tossed and turned that night. He kept thinking of Rabbi Yochanan in prison. Perhaps he should go to the prince. He got up and said Tehillim, then went back to bed. He left it in Hashem's hands to guide him in the right path. The next morning, just before dawn, Naftali gathered his students once again and took them to the secret cave. Yoel, a 9-year-old boy among his students, arrived too late to go with Naftali, so he decided to walk the several miles to the cave on his own. Later that morning, Yoel saw some giant trees and mistook them for the trees outside the cave. He walked to where he thought the cave should be, then pushed through the bushes. He came upon nothing. He went back out to the road, walked a few steps further, and again pushed through. Again he saw nothing. He started to call out, "Rabbi! Rabbi! Where's the cave? Rabbi! Where's the cave?" As he was calling out, two of Wolfgang's soldiers were riding along the road not far away. "What is that?" one of them asked. "Rabbi, where's the cave?" "Some boy is calling out about a cave." The soldiers continued on, soon coming upon Yoel. Yoel froze when he saw them. "Hey there, boy. What are you doing here all alone? And what's this about a cave?"
I don't know what you mean."
One of the soldiers got off his horse, grabbed Yoel by the shoulders, and shook him. "Of course you do. I heard you with my own ears. What about that cave?" Yoel put his lips together. He would never tell about the secret yeshiva. He would rather die. "All right, then tell it to Count Wolfgang." The soldier picked Yoel up and placed him on his horse. Then they galloped off for Wolfgang's estate. "So, you know the whereabouts of a cave, do you?" Wolfgang sneered at Yoel, who was shaking in terror. He put his huge hand on Yoel's cheek and squeezed his chin. "What would a nice boy like you be doing out in the woods in a cave?
learning your worthless books? Have I not gathered them all? Wolfgang roared, and Yol started to cry. Guard! Wolfgang called out. The guard appeared. Take this boy and lock him up. Give him no food or water till he's ready to talk. I want the names of all those who study in the cave, including the teacher. We will finally put an end to their disgraceful studies. When Naphtali came home that night, his wife appeared red-eyed and exhausted. She and the whole community began saying Tilim tearfully after they discovered that Yol had been taken. Naphtali was shocked, but now he knew exactly what he had to do. Yol's life depended on it. The next morning, Naphtali went to the Crown Prince's palace. His heart pounded within him as he arrived at the huge front gate of the palace. The soldiers eyed him suspiciously. I need to see the prince, Naphtali said, trying to keep his voice from trembling.
Does he wish to see you?
That is the question, answered the captain of the guard. Is he expecting you?
No.
How dare you arrive without an appointment? This is an insult to the prince. Soldiers, take this man away. Three soldiers quickly surrounded Naphtali. He kept calm. The prince needs to see me, he said.
And why would the prince need a commoner like you?
Because I have a plan that could help him find Gregor. Soldiers fell silent. The captain of the guard finally said, come with me. Captain took Naphtali into the palace. They walked down a large corridor decorated with crystal and marble until they came to the door of the prince's chambers. The captain knocked in a peculiar way, then opened the door and went in. 2 minutes later, he returned.
The prince will see you, he said.
Naphtali walked into the room. The prince was sitting on his throne, a high-backed chair made of gold and polished mahogany wood. His golden crown sparkled in the light of a giant candelabra over his head. He looked sharply at Naphtali.
Gregor is a thorn in my side, he said. I've been told you can remove the thorn. Weigh your words carefully, for if you fail, you will pay dearly.
Your Highness, Naphtali responded, Count Wolfgang cannot apprehend Gregor because the bandits can observe the coming and going of all of the soldiers on the road. But if there were a large hideout nearby, the prince could put a detachment of soldiers there and lay a trap for Gregor. When he and his men come down from the mountain, the soldiers could seize him and the count would be rid of the thorn.
You are dreaming, the prince replied. The highway runs through thick forest. There is no hideout.
I beg your indulgence, Naphtali said, but there is! It's a secret cave just off the highway in the middle of the forest. I myself have been there a number of times, and there's enough room in its huge cavern to hide 50 soldiers.
Where precisely is this cave? The prince asked.
Naphtali gave the prince directions. The prince kept Naphtali in the palace while he sent one of his soldiers to search for the cave. Within 2 hours, he was back. He had found it, just as Naphtali had said.
Your Highness, it's unbelievable, the soldier cried. No one would ever imagine it to be there.
The prince sprang into action. He arranged that the following day, the Count of Eckelsberg would take a trip along the highway in order to visit the Crown Prince. Word would be spread that the Count was carrying many precious jewels. Every 200 yards along the route, a soldier would be hiding in a tree. They would be trained to whistle a high-pitched bird whistle, which would be the signal that the Count of Eckelsberg is under attack. The whistle would travel from tree to tree, and in no more than 2 minutes, the word would come to the cave. The soldiers of the Crown Prince would then race to capture Gregor and his men.
If this plan works, the prince said to Naphtali, I will reward you handsomely.
The next morning dawned bright and sunny. The Count of Ecclesburg walked to his carriage. He was a good friend of the Crown Prince and a fearless man. He was only too happy to help in the arrest of Gregor. As he prepared to enter the carriage, a man approached him. It was the Duke of Calais. "Good morning, dear Count," the Duke said.
"The Duke of Calais? How nice to see you," said the Count. "What brings you out so early this morning?"
"I heard that you are going on a special voyage down the forest highway," he answered. "I have a special score to settle with Gregor. I beg of you that I be allowed to accompany you."
"Of course, my dear Duke.
You should know, however, that it may be dangerous." The Duke felt for the pistol that he had hidden under his robe. "I'm happy to take the chance," he answered. So the two men entered the carriage, the driver snapped the reins, and they were off. As the two noblemen traveled along the highway, they felt as if eyes were watching them. They were sure that Gregor and his men knew of their journey. They only hoped that the Crown Prince had stationed his soldiers in the trees as he had planned. High above the road, Gregor was watching the carriage with his men.
"Not very intelligent of the good Count of Ecclesburg to journey down the road without a large armed guard," Gregor said. "Men, mount your horses. We have to greet the Count and welcome him to our country." Gregor led his men quickly down the mountain, coming upon the road shortly ahead of the carriage. The driver slowed down and the thieves surrounded the carriage. "Step down from there," Gregor shouted at the driver. The man jumped down. Immediately, a rather noisy bird emitted a high-pitched sound from a tree not far away. Gregor didn't notice. He rode his horse over to the wagon and looked inside. "Ah, the Count of Ecclesburg and the Duke of Calais! Out of the carriage!" Just at that moment, the final whistle had been sounded near the secret cave. The soldiers of the Crown Prince mounted their horses and galloped up the slope, crashing through the bushes and onto the road. The thunder of the horses soon reached the ears of Gregor. He turned and looked down the road in confusion. One of the bandits shouted, "The soldiers of the Crown Prince! They are upon us!" "How could that be?" demanded Gregor. "There was no one there just minutes ago." His men started to flee in every direction, but soon the prince's soldiers were surrounding them. A few shots rang out, and the captain of the soldiers shouted, "Halt! Drop your guns!" Gregor noticed the narrow trail that led off the road. Only Gregor's pony could get through. "Ha-ha! I'll yet escape!" He galloped past the carriage on the way to the trail. At that moment, the Duke of Calais leaped from the carriage right on top of Gregor, knocking him off the pony. Then he drew his gun and pointed it at Gregor. "Yes," said the Duke of Calais, "you will surely be brought to justice." The soldiers led Gregor and his men down the highway to the prison of the Crown Prince. The Count of Ecclesburg and the Duke of Calais turned and went back in the direction that they had come. That afternoon, Naftali went to see the Crown Prince. He was in excellent spirits.
"Good work, my man," the prince said to Naftali. "Your bravery helped us end a terrible threat to the innocent citizens of the land. I shall now make you wealthy."
"Your highness," Naftali said, "I need no reward other than the freedom to study our faith together with our rabbi and our holy books. I beg of you, dear majesty, grant my request. Liberate our rabbi and forestall the plans of the evil Count Wolfgang to destroy our books."
"What do you mean?" asked the prince.
"Count Wolfgang became enraged at our rabbi," Naftali continued. "He sent him to the dungeon. He confiscated our holy books, and he banned the study of our Torah." The prince turned his face away.
"The Count must have his reasons," he replied. "Listen, my good man, take what I offer. You may go to my royal treasury and make yourself a wealthy man."
"But your highness, what good is wealth when our children are starving?"
"What?
Count Wolfgang imprisoned one of our children. He's starving him to death."
The prince's lip began to quiver. The torment of children he could not tolerate. "Starving children? Scribe, he called.
The scribe entered.
Take a quill and begin to write. To Count Wolfgang, due to your failure to apprehend Gregor and his men, and your mistreatment of a young boy, I hereby remove you from your position of authority over the southern region. You are to release the boy and his rabbi immediately. Then you are to return all the books of the Jews. Finally, you are to report to my chambers in 3 days to receive instructions as to your new location. The prince affixed his royal seal to the letter, and it was sent off.
You will have no more problems with him, he told Naphtali. Naphtali was so overjoyed that he started to cry. He kissed the prince's hand and thanked him deeply. Then he left the prince's chambers. As the prince watched him go, he wondered what was in those books of the Jews that they loved so much, that they were willing to give everything just to have them back. Suddenly, he realized that the devotion of this man and his community to those books was somehow responsible for the survival of the Jewish people. Rabbi Yochanan and Yoel were released, the Sfarim were returned, and the Jewish community celebrated joyously. It was a time of thanks and praise to Hashem, the ever-present guardian of Israel.
Like the flower which turns its face toward the sun, like the runner drinks water after his run, like the child who yearns to be held late at night, we yearn for the Torah, our strength and our light, like the beat of the heart and the thought of the brain, like the air in our lungs and the blood in our veins. Couldn't live without Torah for even one day. Don't ever allow them to take it away. Don't ever allow them to take it away. Don't ever allow them to take it away.